Crime Alert, hourly update, breaking crime news now.
I'm Sydney Silvani. The search for missing Michigan mother Lynette Hooker takes another confusing turn as her husband, Brian Hooker, has officially left the Bahamas just 24 hours after claiming his sole focus was finding his wife. Brian Hooker, 59, boarded a commercial flight out of the Caribbean on Wednesday. According to his attorney, Terrell Butler, the move wasn't an escape, but a response to another family crisis. In a statement, Butler said that Hooker's mother is very ill and he has traveled to the U.S. to be at her bedside. While his legal team insists he plans to return, the timing is raising eyebrows. It was only Monday that Hooker was released from Bahamian custody after investigators failed to file charges within the legal time frame following his detention last week. Hooker spoke with several outlets for the first time Tuesday, proclaiming he would never harm Lynette and would not stop searching for her.
I won't be able to stop looking.
You want to keep looking for Lynette.
I'm going to need somebody with more authority to tell me to stop.
I said I've never harmed Lynette, and I never would harm Lynette, and I want to find Lynette. No one has told me not to stop looking, and I'm going to keep looking.
My one job was to look out for her, and that has not happened. And I'm going to keep looking out for her now as best I can.
It was April 4th near Elbow Cay when Hooker claims Lynette fell overboard from their dinghy while they were heading back to their anchored yacht.
She basically just bounced off the dinghy in the middle of a little blow, like 20-some knot winds that popped up on a half-mile maybe trip back to the dinghy, and single thing failed. Every single thing. We weren't wearing life jackets. It was sundown, and the sun set like basically 10 minutes after she fell over. Dinghy key over with her because it wasn't clipped to anything or anybody, and she had the spare dinghy key in her dry bag, which was with her. The wind blew us apart so fast that I think she tried to swim back to the sailboat, back to our sailboat.
Lynette's family is painting a much darker picture. Her mother describes Hooker as a mean and hateful drunk, alleging Lynette had considered leaving him several times. The most chilling details come from Lynette's daughter, who claims Hooker has a history of violence, including a previous incident where he allegedly choked Lynette and threatened to throw her overboard. Public records back up a pattern of volatile behavior. In 2005, Brian was charged with child abuse for allegedly choking his daughter from a previous relationship. Stepdaughter Carly Aylesworth remembering the incident vividly.
I've seen him choke out one of his daughters before, and we had to go to court for that. And I was only in third grade. So he's just repeating patterns.
10 years later, a domestic dispute where Lynette claimed Brian choked her and punched her in the forehead during a drunken rage. Meanwhile, Hooker's attorney says Carly is not to be believed.
She has a medical history that needs to be looked in. She's on certain medication. She can be easily influenced, and that may be affecting what she's seeing as well as her grief at this time.
As of today, the search for Lynette Hooker has officially shifted from a rescue to a recovery mission. With Hooker's departure from the islands and a history of domestic allegations surfacing, many are left wondering if local authorities have made a mistake. More crime and justice news after this. A high-stakes legal battle is heating up in the case against Tyler Robinson, who stands accused of assassinating Charlie Kirk. Attorneys for Robinson are now fighting to pull the plug on media access for a critical upcoming hearing. It's a move that's drawing a sharp rebuke from Kirk's widow. In a motion filed Sunday, Robinson's defense team is asking Judge Tony Graff to ban all still cameras, video cameras, and microphones from the courtroom on April 17th. On that day, Robinson is expected to be in court as both sides file a flurry of motions. Legal experts say the defense is using a hearing-by-hearing strategy. By asking for a ban on just this one date, they avoid a blanket ruling that could allow cameras for the entire trial.
There were cameras all over my husband when he was murdered. There have been cameras all over my friends and family mourning. There have been cameras all over me, analyzing my every move, analyzing my every smile, my every tear. We deserve to have cameras in there. Why not be transparent? There's nothing to hide. I know there's not, because I've seen what the case is built on.
Erica Kirk told Jesse Waters that since the media has followed her grief, the public deserves to see the evidence.
Let everyone see what true evil is. Let everyone see and know how it happened, how it even got to this point. This is something that could impact the generation and generations to come of understanding there is never a justifiable moment for violence, especially political violence. And that's another reason why, too, I've been so open about certain private moments within our family. There's nothing to hide. Let the world see. Let them see.
Robinson's defense also demanding a May 18th preliminary hearing be delayed, insisting they cannot move forward until all expert discovery is finalized. However, prosecutors filed a scathing response, claiming the defense is trying to confer rights upon itself that don't exist yet. They argue that full discovery is a right reserved for the actual trial, stating the defense has already been given more than enough leeway to prepare.
Counting or not counting gang violence.
Robinson is accused of lying in wait on a rooftop about 300 yards from Kirk's Prove Me Wrong booth at Utah Valley University campus and firing a single shot that struck Kirk in the neck on September 10th. Robinson allegedly admitted to what he had done in text to his partner in the minutes after the shooting, remaining in the area in hopes of retrieving his grandfather's Mauser 98. With the release of more surveillance footage from campus, family members eventually recognized Robinson and convinced the 22-year-old to turn himself in.
On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident.
Judge Graff has yet to rule on the camera ban or the request for a delay. A complex legal battle is unfolding over the death of a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee in Charlotte. After a state court ruled the suspect incompetent to stand trial, federal prosecutors are stepping in to ensure the case doesn't stall indefinitely. On August 22, 2025, Irina Zarutska was traveling on the Lynx Blue Line when, according to investigators, 34-year-old DeCarlos Brown Jr. pulled a knife and stabbed her three times without provocation. The sheer randomness of the attack left passengers in a state of shock.
This is Charlotte 911. Do you need police, fire, medic?
We on a plane. This man just stabbed this woman for no reason. I was standing right beside her.
You said a male stabbed someone for no reason? Do they need medic?
Yeah, it's on the train. Yeah, it's a f***ing cleaner.
Okay,
stay alive
with medic.
Brown was apprehended moments later, but the road to a conviction has hit a major snag. This week, court documents revealed that a state evaluation determined Brown is incapable to proceed in his upcoming criminal trial, effectively halting the North Carolina prosecution. The defense has pointed to a long history of mental illness supported by Brown's own statements to authorities and family members. A year before the attack, Brown called 911 from a hospital, claiming he was being manipulated by external forces, leading to a welfare check and Brown's arrest.
My body got exposed to the material. I need you guys to investigate.
It's nothing. If I get an MRI and they see what it is, what they gonna say? We gotta get surgery and get that out so we can investigate what the is.
Put your hands on your back. He's being arrested for misuse of 911. Got that letter.
Why?
As I told you, we didn't have a police emergency, and that if you call back over some nonsense, then we would have to arrest you for misuse of 911.
While the state case is stalled, the Department of Justice is moving forward. Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon confirmed that the state's competency ruling is completely separate from federal proceedings. Brown remains in federal custody, and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Charlotte is preparing for its own independent psychiatric evaluation. Even while behind bars, Brown has continued to deny personal responsibility for the killing. In a jailhouse call to his sister, he blamed his actions on materials he believes were implanted in his brain. Because Brown is in federal custody, the state's process for restoring his competency is currently on hold. The move by the DOJ ensures that even if the state case remains frozen, the federal charges provide a parallel path towards a resolution. Utah, where a judge has unsealed a ballistics report in the high-profile assassination case of Tyler Robinson. Robinson is accused of gunning down Charlie Kirk during a Turning Point USA event at Utah Valley University in September 2025, allegedly perched on a rooftop where he fired a single fatal shot from his grandfather's Mauser rifle into a crowd of 3,000 people.
Counting or not counting gang violence.
Oh my God.
Go, run, run!
The unsealed ATF report clarifies that while physical damage to a recovered bullet fragment prevented a conclusive match to the rifle's barrel, a spent .30-06 cartridge case found on that rooftop was positively identified as having been fired from Robinson's weapon. Investigators also noted prone position impressions in the gravel where the shooter allegedly laid in wait. Furthermore, separate testing reportedly found Robinson's DNA on the weapon, a towel, and several rounds of ammunition. Perhaps most chilling are the inscriptions found on those rounds. During a press conference, Governor Spencer Cox read the messages that investigators say were engraved on the casings.
Investigators noted inscriptions that had been engraved on casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, "Notices, bulges, capital O-W-O, what's this question mark?" Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, "Hey fascist, exclamation point, catch, exclamation point." Up arrow symbol, right arrow and symbol, and three down arrow symbols. A second unfired casing read, "O Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow Chow." And a third unfired casing read, "If you read this, you are gay, LMAO.
While the defense argues the inconclusive ballistics on the bullet fragment shows a weakness in the case, experts say it's simply a result of the bullet hitting bone and breaking on impact. Robinson is due back in court today for a hearing on his motion to bar cameras from future proceedings. He faces the death penalty if convicted of aggravated murder. Federal charges have been unsealed against the 16-year-old stepbrother of Anna Kepner, the 18-year-old cheerleader found dead last November during a family vacation aboard a Carnival cruise ship. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Florida announced Monday that the teenager, identified in court documents only by his initials, TH, is facing counts of murder and aggravated sexual abuse. While the motion was initially filed under seal in February, the case was unsealed Friday following its transfer to adult prosecution. The tragedy unfolded on November 7th while the Carnival Horizon was in international waters returning to the port of Miami. Anna excused herself from dinner early, surveillance footage showing Anna entering the room she shared with her brothers. After eating, the teen boys came to the room before the youngest sibling ventured out again to explore, leaving Anna and their stepbrother alone. When he returned, he noted Anna wasn't in bed, but assumed she got a second wind and was spending more time with the adults. The next morning, panic ensued when Anna didn't meet her family for breakfast, as housekeepers made a horrifying discovery: the teen's body wrapped in sheets and stuffed under her bed. According to the indictment, TH allegedly sexually assaulted and intentionally killed Anna. The Miami-Dade Medical Examiner's Office has since ruled the cause of death as mechanical asphyxiation. Anna's youngest sibling reportedly heard fighting in the cabin the night of her death, telling her boyfriend the details.
He heard him yelling at her, like, in a harmful way, of, like, shut the hell up and stuff like that. Like, something was, like, banging around and stuff, and like the chairs were getting thrown around in the room.
Joshua, too, says Anna was afraid of her stepbrother, but dad Chris Kepner ignored his warnings.
He says, "Dad, I tried to tell the parents that this was happening, and they didn't want to believe me." He's like infatuated, attracted to her like crazy. He's always wanted to date her.
Kepner spoke out yesterday, stating simply that justice needs to be served. He expressed frustration that TH has been released into the custody of a guardian rather than being held in a detention facility. Anna was a high school senior with dreams of cheerleading for the University of Georgia. Her family remembers her as a bubbly and reliable sister who loved her siblings deeply. As for the legal proceedings, the FBI is leading the ongoing investigation. Lawyers for TH and his biological father have not yet responded to requests for comment, while an attorney for his mother declined to comment. For the latest crime and justice breaking news, be sure to follow the Crime Alert hourly update on your favorite podcast app. With this Crime Alert, I'm Sydney Silvani.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.